Hi, I'm Lou, the host of Love Me, a CBC original podcast about the messiness of human connection. The show features deeply personal stories, like a mother forced to press charges against her own son, a couple that falls in love through Google Translate, and a man whose father-in-law asks him to build his coffin. Subscribe to Love Me at cbc.ca/loveme or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Tell me about this thing that happens sometimes between our appointments where feeling ambivalent about coming, you come, we have a really good appointment, lots of stuff shifts, settles, a week, sometimes 2 weeks go by. What's happening to that cycle between appointments?
It's getting longer. Wow. Like, I think today I was kind of like, I don't feel this need of like, oh, I've got to get there so that I can like get through the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That didn't really happen this time.
Wow.
So that's good.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, it's like, I feel like invisible in a way, right?
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. Here's a therapy session with a client we're calling Kristen. For so much of Kristen's life, there has been the experience of feeling isolated or lonely. And as Kristen and I have been working together, we've been trying to tease out what are the spaces where she's actually been lonely and misunderstood. And what are the spaces in her life where she's kept herself alone, where she has felt like she needed to be on the inside because it was too scary to be in friendship or in vulnerability with someone else? What you hear in this audio is something that's very characteristic of my style of doing therapy. We're using what's happening moment to moment, making it explicit, bringing it into awareness, and then seeing if we can massage it a little bit so that hopefully when she leaves therapy, she has a little bit more capacity to believe that she can connect with other people, not just with me.
So like it was my birthday on the 9th, and out of my whole family, like not my kids or husband, two people out of my whole family remembered and just sent messages online, and I was like, okay.
That's what's the feeling of, there?
Well, it was just
see it
like
on your face.
My birthday has always been hard, so usually I'll just kind of chalk it up to it being emotional because it's just a hard day for me. But I think now that I'm becoming aware of, like, this is the cost of having checked out of really living for so long, is that now I'm becoming aware of how lonely I feel.
I want to make a bit of room for that there.
Yeah.
I'm feeling really connected to the emotion I see on your face.
Yeah. So there's some grief, I think, there.
Wow.
Right? It's like I've missed out.
Missed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How is that to say?
It feels kind of weighty, like now that I'm willing to even acknowledge it, right? Because when you can just do the ignoring. And there's been growth, because I used to just not celebrate my birthday at all. But now I have kids and they're like, want to do the things, right?
They want to celebrate you because you matter to them.
Yeah. And so then this year, one of my boys looked at me and he's like, you look sad. And I was like, oh, do I look sad? And he goes, yeah. And I said, do you have any thoughts maybe on why I feel sad? And he was like, maybe because we've been fighting. And I was like, well, you guys have been arguing today, but, you know, that's certainly not, that's not what this is. And, and then, you know, I shared a little bit that it's kind of a hard day for me, but it's not about anything that you've done or not done or, you know. But, like, those are the times where being a mom is so hard because you bump up against those things that you don't want your children to feel any pain or responsibility for the pain that you're carrying when it has nothing to do with them.
Yeah,
but I'm also aware that it does impact them.
Right.
Because if I'm struggling to live in the moment and to enjoy the things that they're trying to do, and, you know, that's not good either. So thankfully, I was able to kind of halfway through the day go, okay, like, what can we do now? Okay, well, these are the things that we can do today, and this would be a great way to spend the day. And so we kind of like, I was able to pull it out of the downward spiral halfway through, which was good.
Oh, that seems really new for you.
And we were house sitting, so we were able to have a fire in the fireplace, and the boys had gotten, I don't know, there are those packages that you throw in and it makes the fire change color. So we were sitting there and they're like, it's like in Harry Potter. And so we were all laughing about that. And it was good. It ended up being like, a really good day. But I'm still carrying that kind of like, well, really the reason why I even started therapy is the way I'm living is not working. So there's like hope there that I'm not going to be 80 and hopefully feeling so invisible, but right now I'm like having to like, oh, this is here, right?
And when I see that on your face, I'm assuming like the grief or the awareness of these patterns that haven't been working.
If I've learned anything here, it's that like I have to attend to it too, right? And I can't really move through it until I acknowledge it
Oh.
and listen, right? Like,
That sounds just so wise. So you can feel us in this moment attending to it, and there's a maybe even a sense of pride in knowing this is right. This is important. And the grief, just when we locate it, I'm wondering if it has any words.
I guess discontent. Like, I'm not content to live here and stay there, and I don't want to be alone anymore. Like,
I don't want to be alone
oof.
anymore. Yeah, what happened there when you said that? That in all the ways that you've tried to protect yourself from getting hurt, they worked and they left you with more space around you than you would like.
But maybe that it's just been I've been using that to kind of hide because the other is really scary, right? Talking to people is really scary. Friendships are can be really hard.
What I really like about what Kristen's saying here is that it's the most honest thing we could say about relationship and connection and being human is that we could be hurt. Most of us have felt that fear at some point, and a question we get to ask ourselves is, what are we doing with that fear? Are we naming it in an honest way, kind of like Kristen is, or are we hiding behind our posturing, our performing, our distance making? Is it easier to say, I'm going to be a really funny person to make myself be liked, and in that way, I'm going to secure connection from everyone that I'm with? Or is it more honest to say, I'm scared of being rejected? Sometimes we call these defenses. Our defenses are what protects us from feeling, our use of humor, the way that we are overly caring and overly nurturing. Perhaps we get so good at telling convincing, compelling stories, and it's harder for us to sit in moments of stillness or quiet. Or maybe we fill our schedule full of social engagements, or we only let people get close after years and years and years of them proving that they're trustworthy. But at the root of it is what Kristen is saying. I'm scared. Will I be hurt?
Well, it's just that feeling of, when you go swimming and you're gonna like jump in and there's kind of that like, maybe I
Nervous?
shouldn't, and a little bit
Oh,
of nervous
okay.
and my brother-in-law goes, yeah, excitement. Like, and for me, because joy and like excitement, all those things are not something I've really let into my life because they feel scary. I don't experience them probably in that same way.
There's something that really like clicked for me as you said that. Excitement is such a motivational emotion. It like really is energizing and really helps us move towards experiences. And if that hasn't been allowed or we don't know how to feel that, then it would be hard. Probably you'd be so much better at seeing danger or like feeling the fear and the risk instead of the "and I want to" parts of it.
Even a lot of my teen years was spent, my mom would drive me to things and then I would get there and I'd be like, I don't want to. And I'd just sit in the car, right? I missed out on a lot of things because, you know, it was scary.
Right.
And I just wouldn't push through. Riding horses was the only place where that didn't happen. And my riding instructor was a military wife. She was scary. She was really... But in the most wonderful way. My first horse show, I was terrified. And I remember feeling so sick, I threw up. And I was about 15. And I told my mom, because my mom is always the person to rescue me and do things for me, so I didn't have to. And my riding instructor came over, and she grabbed my horse by the bridle, and she said, "Look at me." And I'm just like, okay,
oh, yeah, you have my attention. Yeah.
And she's like, "Get on your horse, get out there, and like, you're doing it.
Do it."
And I was just like, okay. I was so scared of her.
Oh, that the fear of her took over the fear of doing it.
Yeah, and of disappointing her. And so I did, and I got a third place ribbon in show jumping. And then it was like, oh, okay. When's my next? You know, when's the next show? And she's like, well, one of my students got sick and had to go home. Do you want to take up the rest of hers for the day? And I was like, yeah. And I ended up doing all of these ones. And I didn't win any more ribbons. But it was like, I was just so energized and excited.
Yeah, what are you sensing as you tell me? Like, just let's drop into the quality of this feeling.
That it's worth it. And I know it is. Like, and that energy is the thing that I want to feel more of, because I think that, like, when you said that, it's like, oh, right. So it'd be very easy to be depressed and stay in bed and stay home and not do anything.
Without that.
Without that.
So then let's give it just a bit more attention so we can really, really get familiar with it. Because you've been it's been a stranger to you for so long. When you feel it, even right now. What's it like?
Really colorful. Well, it's like
in what way?
The fire. The boys were, we were talking, what is our favorite color? And then it was mostly blues and greens and then purple.
And does that match right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm almost picturing the Aurora Borealis inside, like all these sparks and jumps of color.
Yeah.
So there's that. And pay, if you can, very subtle attention to the quality of the energy in your body. This sometimes excitement comes with a kind of, like, the potential of movement. Like, when I notice feeling excitement, and I actually feel it quite a bit right now hearing you talk about this, and it's almost like the ability to spring it in my chair. Is right there, as opposed to wanting to sit back and lean back, which might come with some other emotions. It's like the readiness to spring into action, but not in a fear way.
Yeah.
What's clear to you right now?
The newness of it?
Yeah. Can you say more about that?
All the plants that are the seeds that we put down are like germinating. And
you mean that in a literal way?
Yeah.
And symbolic.
And how exciting that is.
This is a really appropriate metaphor for Kristen, too, because she's so skilled in the garden. It happens to be spring at the exact moment when Kristen and I are recording this session. So it works well on a few levels here. Often when people come to therapy, it's almost like we're putting the seed down into the dark, cold ground. And we water it and we water it and we water it. You know, we come to appointments, we take in what the therapist is saying, we do the homework, we stretch ourselves, and we wait. Sometimes people get really discouraged in that process, but if we are paying attention close enough, it's like we're seeing these things sprout up through the ground, the things that we planted so long ago that we've been watering faithfully and waiting for patiently all of this time.
I think every time we've had a garden, there's that point where you're like, are they going to come up? You have to be pretty hopeful, uh-huh. right? There is that trust that they are actually going to do something. But also, I feel like we're kind of past that point in some ways because, like, we're kind of past the germination part in some of the stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that that protective kind of anything that's new is scary. But I've been doing it, and I can't tell myself I haven't been anymore, right?
Oh, it's too hard to ignore.
It's like, well...
It's right in front of you. It's right in front of me. I'm seeing it right now.
Yeah. The part of having friends that's so scary, right, is the being known by people. Like, I'm good for a bit, and then it's, like, too much. And so now I'm thinking back, like, to the people that are in my life right now that... I have a tendency to not refer to as friends, but then when I think back on it, it's like, well, what is that?
I imagine that if friendship and getting close is scary, that it's been helpful to not even use that language.
Right.
And yet I hear this reckoning like, well, right. I can deceive myself only so far.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what is there, friendship.
Yeah. And I think being here in this space every couple of weeks has given me practice because you know I've told you things that like most people don't know, and I have been able to keep showing up even when I haven't wanted to, and so that is starting to like expand out my ability.
Oh, that feels really exciting.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
What if someone you love asks you to help them die? What would you say? This is the powerful question at the heart of The Ultimate Choice. The series follows the journey of Michael and his wife Anne as they grapple with his request to choose the way he wants to die. I'm Rob Cribb, and through their story, I learned a lot about my own family. I hope the show is a way to start conversations many of us want to have, but rarely do. The Ultimate Choice is out now.
When you are in that sense of excitement, newness, these seeds poking out through the ground in your life that have a quality of helpfulness to them, how do you feel about taking a step towards friendship? Just from the place that you're sitting right now, just from this feeling.
More like it's possible, and I feel a little more confident that I can, and that even if I totally flub up, that it doesn't have to be a total deal breaker.
Oh, wow.
Having you say what you did to me months and months ago now, right? That even if I did something like that we can work through, you know, if I say something that hurts your feelings or is like, you know, that was so like, oh, really?
New. Surprising.
You're just going to, you know, like, you know, get rid of me. And that's really new. Huh. Because my family doesn't get rid of you exactly, but they make you pay.
Yeah, friendship is so scary when the way we do it is so rigid that we don't have enough room to stretch out and enjoy the quality of connection. So it seems like, if I'm just hearing you right, you're learning from our connection that relationship can be wide enough to hold, like, missing each other or even hurts.
Yeah.
That things can be repaired and that no one has to be perfect for the connection to exist. If I step back, like there are all of these places in your life that the stories are widening. Stories about you, stories about relationship.
Yeah. One way I guess that I've been thinking about it too is when the ground is compacted, right? The roots can't really...
Right.
They'll really just kind of stay kind of where they can. And even like a potted plant, eventually the roots will be, you know, it'll get root bound, right? So the gardens that we've been installing, we had to have an excavator come in because it was so compacted. So we knew that things aren't going to grow very well. So we had him dig it up.
Ooh,
you know, I'm going to like that, the metaphors and symbolism. Okay.
And just that, like, I want to be free to be me. Mm-hmm. Whatever that looks like. Even though right now I don't feel like I have even a very good idea, that's kind of exciting too.
And tell me again, you're using that word excitement.
Yeah. Like that day when I realized, hey, guess what? I can do it.
Yeah, is there like a sensory quality to I can do it? I really want for you to come here.
It's a bubbly.
Bubbly.
It's bubbly.
Wow. Where does the bubbly happen?
It's kind of down my arms and legs. Ooh. Kind of like a movement thing. Like Ooh. What you said, like when you want to like jump up and get moving and get busy.
I so think about when I hear bubbly up the arms, I think about like when we're excited, we're like, yeah, we do this with our arms and we high five people and we like, like our bodies naturally know how to show to the world around us through that energy. Like something that feels really good is happening inside of me.
Yeah. And I'm realizing like that restrictive kind of the lack of wanting to move and... It's kind of like the breathing thing. When I first was learning how to like breathe more deeply, I feel like the pandemic has kind of made that a little harder, but that just felt revolutionary for me. Like it was so just night and day.
A big thing,
And movement feels like another added thing onto that, right?
Sometimes when I'm listening to the way a person talks and what they're saying, I'm hearing it through the filter of everything I've heard them say before. It's almost like I'm holding up two photographs. One is of them in the present moment, and one is of them the first session that we had together. And it allows me to track how change is happening. And what I'm hearing in this session, it's tonal changes in what we would call prosody, in the sing-song nature of how Kristen describes her life and how she uses language and sound to communicate her inner experience, compared to when we first met, where there was what we might call flat affect, a kind of depressed state where things were muted and dulled, and her voice almost seemed to be located very deep inside of her. I hear newness. I hear vitality. It's almost like there is this kind of waking up that's happening to some more color, some more life.
So let's go back to this. I know you've got a water glass on your, you could put that down if you wanted to. Okay. But I'd love just to honor this excitement that's bubbling up through your arms and your legs. And if we could just do this together for a moment.
Yeah.
And... Oh.
The boys do that now too. They call it, you know, the jazz hands. I'm always laughing because they get excited.
How is it for us to do this together?
Not as embarrassing.
Right. I mean, together. Together is such an antidote to embarrassment.
I know. We were dancing in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's like, oh, this is embarrassing, and I don't... And then next thing you know, they're like dancing around the kitchen, and I was like, see, isn't this so much better? Yes. And I thought, like, the ripples that are happening in my family.
Yeah. You can see the fruit.
Yeah.
This is, again, what I love. As much as we have these stories out there in the culture that say, you know, going to therapy is about being self-absorbed or looking at yourself or navel-gazing, I think when we are doing right by ourselves in our healing process, it returns to our community.
Right.
Like we show up in relationship different. We give healing away.
Right.
And invite other people into even more of their freedom when we are in ours.
Right.
And I can just see that happening with your family every time you tell me a story about, you know, when mama's doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a gift it is to them.
Yeah. Big time.
Wow.
And I think the loss of that big hulking shame rock that I had around my brother's death.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, I felt lighter. You don't feel as weighted down.
Yeah. Can you use eye language? I don't feel
as weighted down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that thing. I used to not even be able to walk in our neighborhood.
Mm.
And I don't know when that started, probably teens, because I was so... I just always had the feeling that I was being watched and judged. And even that's been changing. So how many things have been attached to the shame thing of, like, that I'm bad and there's this secret thing that I'm hiding? Like, having that gone, and I expect I'm going to be uncovering even more things that it's like, oh, that's gone. And
would you be open to a kind of experiment of sorts?
Mm-hmm.
Just to notice if you feel excited and to stay with it a bit longer.
Right. Okay.
As you were retraining your nervous system, that excitement is allowed.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. We learn it's allowed by being with it, mm-hmm. and realizing, oh, that can be integrated into us. It can be safe. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be judged.
Right.
So okay. staying with the excitement, mm-hmm. feeling it. The second thing is asking the excitement to come to the surface when you think about connecting with someone okay. or reaching out.
Yeah.
What I'd want is like to just sink in.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. There were so many times today where I said, hey, be with the sensation. Mm. You give me like a kind of an analysis or a story about something else.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you could, if you could redirect yourself mm-hmm. back to a sensation, feel the bubbles, feel the aurora borealis,
right.
The colors, yeah. notice the impulse for movement.
Right.
Let yourself engage in that movement. Mm-hmm. Any of those things would be enough to really deepen okay. this into you.
Yeah.
To take it from idea into right. experience.
Right. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That is such a challenge.
It is. And it's not because you're failing or you're not doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need to be shown that it's okay to feel in our bodies.
Right. Not so, getting into the head thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's a hard one.
Yeah. Right.
So you've got these two little experiments to try.
Yep.
Feeling and staying with excitement and then seeing if you can link excitement and connection.
Okay.
And we'll just see how that goes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. If you listen to my work long enough, you'll hear that locating experience in the body or checking in with our sensations is something that's really important to my therapeutic work. And that has come kind of twofold. On one hand, because the literature about how we change keeps telling us that the body is the place that we need to return to if we want to heal and if we want to thrive. And it tracks very closely alongside my own healing journey and how I've learned to repair a broken relationship with my body and really to be more present and full in my life. One of the first experiences I ever had with what we might call embodiment, or the experience of being a body, not just a thinking self that has a body, was in a therapy session that I had. And I had a therapist who just drew my attention to the way I was sitting and what it felt like on the inside of me. And then I've just looked for more and more experiences, forms of dance or movement, including developing with some colleagues things like intuitive running, where instead of running to conquer the body, I'm using movement and running as a way to enter more fully into my felt sense of being a body. I mean, there are an infinite number of ways of doing this because we have been first a body. That's the place where life happens. And this is just about remembering that and allowing ourselves to re-inhabit ourselves more fully. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced and edited by Jody Martinson. Mixed and music by Lee Rosevere. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. Arif Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.